football on Off the Ball.
I don't see why we should start to slip now just because the league has won. You know, there's still two games left. You have to respect the other two teams and show them why, I suppose, maybe why we've won the league.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
All right, welcome back to Friday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. We're flying it in here. Hope you're enjoying Storm Amy in a safe way. We've Keith Tracy and myself as usual, and we're delighted to be joined by everyone's favourite League of Ireland duo. They're back. It's Barry Murphy and Owen Heary. Good morning, lads. How are you? We've loads to get stuck into. We have the matches last night, of course, the FAI Cup and the Republic of Ireland squad. I did promise that we'd continue Keith Friday. The question I have, or we were sent in, lads, was the best stadium that you played in, or best stadia, and also the best, your favourite match. So it could be one that you played in or one that you watched that means a lot to you. Keith, I presume you have a couple ready to go here.
I have a few in the chamber. Where do you want to start? The best game or stadium?
The stadium, because it was a request, I suppose. We'll go by requests.
The best one, I've wrote down a few, but I think the one that, if I was to play one more game, I'd probably like to play in Goodison Park.
All right.
And it's not because it was the biggest attendance or the atmosphere was, well, the atmosphere was pretty electric, but it was just the proximity of the fans when you crossed the ball, when you were throwing, and me being a winger, I was always getting chalk on my boots, and you could just hear all the little abuse you were getting, and I never got to, you know, too bad, but just the little things you hear as you have your back to the crowd, and it's that little intimidating thing. I absolutely loved it. The stadium of Lough, Sunderland, loved playing up there. That was a really good atmosphere. And Newcastle also.
Yeah.
Hillsborough. Loved playing in Hillsborough.
Yeah.
Only played there a handful of times, but absolutely loved Hillsborough. Ellen Road.
Oh, I love watching
the
game.
There was something about Ellen
Road.
There's a lot of Leeds fans in my family, and when I played in Ellen Road, it just felt special under the lights with the Champions League days and Harry Kewell, Viduka, those lads like just knocking around in the memory.
Did you play well when it was a hostile crowd?
I'd like to think I did, yeah. Yeah, I'd like to think, because I was like super relaxed, as I said. I wouldn't really be too tuned in. I'd be singing songs in my head, so I would never get too intimidated by anything, to be honest. So, I loved the hostile ones, the ones where the fans were right on top of you.
And we're open this to the audience as well, and even fans experience the best stadium. What about yourselves, lads? Anything that sticks out?
Yeah, Steaua Bucharest Stadium for me. Like he's saying, hostile environment, they absolutely hammered us from start to finish over there. They were throwing bolts and everything at us, and it was just one of those.
Trying what?
A bolt. You know, one of the big
bolts.
It's like strong.
That's the accent, is it?
Jesus. But yeah, so it was like that, and intimidating, but it was a fantastic ground as well to play.
Yeah.
And then obviously the Riazor, like, was one that'll always stick out in my memory.
Oh, the Riazor is amazing. You know, there was something about that. I was never at that stadium, but on TV, even where the camera was positioned.
Yeah.
That they had dark nets as well, and everything was it looked a bit aggressive, like it looked a bit intimidating.
A proper ground. It's the likes of that. And but come here, I love playing up in Ballybuffet and things like that. Those grounds always stand out to me because it was always a Friday night, lashing rain and mud bats and crowd just on top of you, a wall to separate you. Like the wall was about 2 foot from the sideline. So, yeah, the likes of those. I always enjoyed playing in those games and played in those grounds.
Yeah, we played over in Hanover. It was brilliant.
Yeah. You know,
we got beaten, but the German fans were singing Molly Malone. It was great. Like, it was unbelievable. Then that same kind of series of games we played over in Shiroki Brijeg in Bosnia.
Yeah.
You're talking about hostile crowds. It was a hostile ground. You literally left the pitch and it was like, be careful where you're walking, there's landmines. So I'm going to get the ball behind the goal. There's landmine things around it. Unbelievable. Just signs on the side of the pitch. Be careful. Landmines, like, I'm going, is this just a mind mess here? What's going on? But it's one of those things. It was one stand and the rest were like tenement flats. So like people were coming out and looking over the edge of their balcony, looking down at the match. Brilliant spot.
I'd say the one thing that separates the rest of us from the three of you when it comes to talking about football, or one of the things anyway, is like the three of you played against loads of people, like thousands of people at once.
Only 11 against 11.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's the thing, right? So how much of a difference does it make? Because it seems like, so I was standing on Crow Park pitch for the Oasis gig, and I was like looking up at the stands. I was like, this is insane. Just get a little glimpse of what it must be like to play in front of a packed house.
People can get carried away with it, but you know, it was Roy Keane, wasn't it, always says, I think it was Gary Neville, said, oh, they've got so many fans going to travel over and they're going to do this, and they can't play. It's 11 against 11. It's always going to be 11 against 11. So while it can be loud and it can be intimidating, they can't physically affect what you're going to do on the ball. So it's all about just keeping your cool. But I think that's when you find out about players, is when you're in the trenches like that, and you think, is he going to show you away? Is he going to want the ball? He's made an early mistake. What's he going to do now? I think that's when you really find out. Because anybody can play football when it's nice and it's easy, ozy. But when you're down in the trenches and the crowd are really baying for you, that's when you find out.
I'm not asking any of the three of you to name names, but do you have players that you can think of that were different the bigger the crowd versus, say, what they were like in training? When no one's watching.
I think there's some players, as Keith said, that can really play when it's an intimidating ground or atmosphere, or things that are torn up on the day. That's basically what it comes to, torn up. And sometimes when you're playing those games, you don't hear what's going on around you because you're so engrossed in the game itself. Concentration levels are on the game. And then someone might turn around and say, did you hear this after? And you're like, no, didn't hear that. Like, you know, it's like I was talking to you about Stewie and, you know, last week.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, I didn't hear things that, you know, I was saying to Stewie, and it was only the next day he was telling me about it. It's just, you know, you go out, you put your performance on, you come off the pitch, and hopefully you leave everything out there.
Was there any horrible stadiums?
Oh yeah, loads. Yeah.
They mightn't even look that bad, but you just had a bad time in.
The Den.
The Den.
In Millwall.
Like the fans are basically...
You've got Danny Shittu barking as you come out of the tunnel. It's fairly, the fans don't intimidate you. It's the players you're playing against intimidate you. Millwall was always a horrible one. But talking about players that are good on the training ground, but, you know, don't quite do it on the pitch. Sam Allardyce used to call me a TGP player, training ground player. So the only torn up on the training ground player. So he used to call he comes, TGP.
How did you take that?
I just called him Plasma Head back. There was me and Sam sort of got on a personal level. It would be slagging, you know. It wouldn't be acting too serious. But, yeah, no, you used to call me a TGP player.
What was the result of that? Would you try more in games to prove him wrong?
I tried to be super composed then. Like, if we played in Anfield or something, I'd go against it. Like, give me the ball on my own 18-yard box. I'd try and do something to prove that this doesn't really bother me. But, yeah, I think he knew what he was doing, though, Sam. You know, he'd poke me a little bit and think, let's see what reaction I get out of him here. But... yeah, that was my nickname for a while.
How would you have how would you have reacted to that if the manager said you're a training ground goalkeeper? Really?
No. Some of that, like, they know how to poke players during the week, keep reacting to it, like, got to perform to them at the weekend. But there is players that will fold, like that they need an arm around the shoulder. But most of them managers know what they're doing, don't they?
Yeah, Keely used to do it to me all the time.
Like, did he?
He said, the player you're marking today, I've seen him in town pushing a pram around today and things like that, just to wind me up and say, because he took the pill out of you last week.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Keely would do. He'd wind me up so much and I'd be going out on the pitch saying, that's not going to happen today. Like, just more focused. And then he'd come to me after the match and said, I knew that'd get you going. It's just
a man,
you know,
motivator.
The best of button, yeah. Mm. And I'd know exactly what he was doing, but he'd keep doing it and I'd keep reacting to it.
Yeah.
You know, so there is managers that know how to get the best out of players.
All right, let us know your favourite stadium that you've been to. We'll get to favourite games in a bit because there are games to talk about from last night. You might start in Prague here. It was all going so well for Shamrock Rovers until the 33rd minute, but how do you count them for that error? I'll start with the centre back in the room, but it was a collision, really. Was it a lack of communication between Lopez?
I didn't really see it because I was watching Shell's game last night, so it was only bits and pieces I seen and Rovers. But look, they're playing Sparta Prague. You expect, I think, them to be a much higher level than Rovers. You've seen it last year.
Yeah.
You beat them 4-2 over there and 2-0 at home, so they're just on a different level. And I think Rovers hanging out for 23 minutes was good, and then the mistake, they end up conceding goal. I think they conceded, you know, two bad mistakes.
The first one was a bad defensive error. The second one was a bad goalkeeping error. Do you see the second one?
Yeah, it's like it was reverted to 3 or 4 years ago, the way they were. There used to be like a bingo card with Shamrock Rovers in Europe. They conceded a poor goal, conceded one before half time, pounded it in the second half, and kind of reverted that last night as well. It's just like, that's not like Pico Lopez. He doesn't do that in the league. Just gets his left foot on and puts it out for a throw and miss kicks it. They score from that. And then a set piece, two set pieces last night was really poor. Rovers will look at that. They lose the first header. Evan Gindy's got to do better with he's got to hold it or parry it out better. They score from that. And then the second set piece in the second half.
Yeah.
It's 3-1. Like, you're looking at it going, what's going on here? It's a short corner. And then it happened about 10 minutes later again. And it's the same setup. So you're thinking, that's not a player issue. That's not one where you go, we need an extra man out there. That's come from the management, where you're going, they've seen something, conceded two goals against them last year from corners, so they're thinking, we're going to pack the middle, let them get balls in and we'll deal with them. But they didn't deal with them, just two really poor set pieces, and it's so far from where Shamrock Rovers have been in the last couple of years in Europe.
Yeah,
really poor performance.
I know you didn't see the game, but you'd be surprised that Danny Mangione came on. Like, he scored a great goal and that could prove fairly huge at the end of the campaign, like minus three goal difference now, and Dylan Watts is on the bench. Graham Burke, probably less surprising, but maybe Watts and Mandrell that you might have expected them to start this game.
Yeah, possibly, but the only thing is that they've been playing so many games the last
couple
of weeks.
Yeah, it's a lot going on,
isn't it? Last week's game against Bowes took a lot out of both teams. It was a fantastic game to watch. So he's probably thinking, need to refresh it here and get them going again. And, you know, they have a cup match as well that they need to get into that final coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
So he's probably thinking, we're playing a top team here. Probably in his own head, he knew he wasn't going to come away with a result out of this. Let's be honest, like, they're playing at a higher level, these boys. So he's thinking, see, can we get something with these players, then bring on Danny Mandrew and try have a little go at it near the last 20-25 minutes, and then keep them fresh then for this week, the cup game as well.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of thinking for a manager, because it's going game every 5 days was a game, and then it's now he's another couple of days and a game again. So it's keeping the players fresh, and he has the squad to deal with it.
I did enter my mind last night, it was like, well, maybe Rovers just haven't been challenged enough this season, but they actually have had difficult games recently, so that doesn't really check out. And you are just talking about levels here.
Yeah, I'm talking about it.
Even internationals, though, yeah. It's a difference. You could see what he was doing playing McGovern up top last night. It's a fairly similar team to the team they played last year, as far as they have loads of possession. Rovers couldn't get out last year really over there. Aaron Green scored two really good goals, but was on the counter attack. Gave up a lot of possession, and it could have been more. And you could see what he was thinking. If I get him and Gaffney up, get the ball up to them, keep the ball up there, and try and get us up the pitch. But I think Danny Mandrew's been so good lately in Europe that I was just really surprised he didn't play.
Tara, Shells, hacking.
Yeah, it was a good defensive display by Shells. Wasn't it a great game to watch, to be honest with you? You know, Shells gave up a lot of possession to Hacking. And I think they left Hacking off the hook last night. I think they were there for a beating, to be honest with you. Looking at them, the passing by both teams was poor at times. Conditions were poor. They could have turned it into a really, you know, a League of Ireland, typical League of Ireland night with the conditions that were there. Like, so I think the Shells more defensive display than attacking last night. You can see they were just looking for the long ball over the top of Meepo. But the centre-half, like, he's very experienced. You know, he kept coming across and just covering Meepo all the time. Even though Meepo had the pace on him, it was comfortable enough for him. But Shells, defensively, very, very good. Get a point, get 133 grand over. They'd be just to get off the mark. But I really do think that the game was there for the taking last night. They could have had more of a go, because they're going to come up against better opposition than Palace and things like that. So last night, I think, could have been one where they'd have gone out and got 3 points in it.
Did you expect them to get something from this game last night, Shells?
I did, the way they set up, and just looking at how Hackenham started this year in the league as well. And I just think they're a good European side, Shells. I think they're going to be strong. And you look at the benchmark, it's probably going to be 7 points. They needed to pick up a point last night. You've got a couple of decent fixtures coming up where you might get wins. Skandija, Drita, and bar that, you're looking at AZ Alkmaar, Palace and Celtic. You're not going to pick up much from that, so you've got to kind of get your points on the board early, whereas Rovers would be looking at the second half of those fixtures to try and get results. So
yeah,
it's a good start for them.
Is it a different looking side now to Damien Duff's reign?
I think so.
Is it really different?
Yeah, I think they seem to be playing with a lot more confidence on the ball. You know, they don't seem to be playing under pressure as such. He has them organised. Now, he would have had them organised with Damien, because Damien, the two of them work together well. But just seems to be the reins has taken off them in terms of the players themselves expressing themselves. Maybe that's to do with the, you know, they're not under, I suppose, criticism either. Like, you know, after matches, they're not getting as much criticism in the press and things like that, because a lot of media attention that would have been on Damien's team talks after matches and things like that. So they probably feel freer than they have done in a long time. And even looking last night, Hacking have conceded 44 goals in 25 games. That's what you're thinking, the chance to get at them. But he never really tested them last night. I think they had the first shot just before half time that went narrowly wide. Other than that, wasn't much in it. Like,
yeah. All right, decent, a mixed night certainly for both sides, but a decent point at the very least for Shells. Back to domestic action, the FAI Cup semi-final, the first one. Well, it's due to be tonight, Clarence Cross, Cork City against St Patrick's Athletic. I think there's some sort of a pitch inspection at 11, because Storm Amy's wreaking havoc a bit more in that part of the country than here. But probably the bigger talking point, if this game goes ahead, is that there is set to be a protest. You see this with the Cork City fans against Dermot Usher and the ownership. So it looks like it's going to be at least 10 minutes that it will interrupt the game. I don't know exactly what's going to happen yet. There's rumours that it's going to be the tennis ball situation at the Aviva. Do you remember that a few years ago?
Yeah.
When the Ireland fans, it was, I think, before Conor Hurrihan took and scored a free kick, there was a lot of tennis balls thrown on. There's talk of that. There's talk of people just not showing up or whatever. But Cork City fans aren't happy. Like, they're the most expensive tickets in the Premier Division, €25 a pop. Dermot Usher's put £1.4 million into the club. He's got some big names like Shawnee Maguire back to the club, David Myler in his assistant, Fiacre Kelleher, Queeveen's brother, Rory Feely. But recruitment's been a nightmare. It hasn't worked out. They're as good as gone. this is an absolutely enormous occasion, and the reason that they're picking this time to protest is it's on TV. It's on national TV. It's the FAI Cup semi-final. So much on the line, but the club hasn't been in this turmoil in a long time. It's mad.
It's never ending down there, though, is it? Like, you can say it hasn't been that in a long time, but it's come up every four or 5 years. So you can understand from a fan's point of view, 25 quid to see your team get battered every week isn't something you want to be spending, but like, the prices are going up throughout the league. Pat's away tickets are 24 quid for away fans as well, but you do look at Dermot Usher as well, and just the way he's gone about things, he's treating it like a business, which you should do. Like, most of the other teams are doing it as well, but the results haven't come on the pitch. Just basic errors, not bringing in a technical director.
That was the big thing. At football, there was a real lack of football knowledge when it comes to this ownership, because Usher has a bit, he's got rid of the kit manufacturer, so he's got rid of Nike and Adidas, so they make their own kit. And they just launched it there yesterday, just an away version. Jackie Lennox is the sponsor. It looks class, it looks unbelievable. So that's a great call by him.
It's clever,
but like, it's the football side of it is the real problem.
You can take yourself away from that as Dermot Usher. You bring in the director of football, and suddenly the football side of it is pressures on the director of football, and you can deal with the business side of it. That's a simple appointment from a business point of view, I think. And listen, the performance hasn't been good enough. They spent a lot of money up top, brought in a goalkeeper that wasn't good enough at the start. They brought in players that just haven't been good enough for this league, and obviously they've had some big injuries as well. But Tim Clancy spoke about how short his staff were behind the scenes. Like, all that sort of stuff. For the Premier League now, and the way this league is going, you have to have all that in place. They just don't have it on the football side.
What's going to happen tonight on the pitch?
On the pitch, I think actually Cork have a good chance tonight.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, you know, you look back to the last year when they were struggling down the bottom. There's always that little twist that the cup, you know, takes the pressure off you and they go out and just give a performance. But you look at last week, Pat's going to Sligo, losing the game. They're hit and miss. And I think Cork at home, and if the fans do go in, a packed house, it could be, you know, it won't be all one way, I think. I don't think people are expecting Pat's and Rovers final. I don't think it's going to end up
really
like that. It could really be a Cork and Rovers final. Now, that's not writing Kerry off. I just
Cork,
think Rovers
Kerry Munster final.
I just think Rovers have a lot more, you know, I suppose squad wise, depth wise, they have enough to beat Kerry. Where it is, Pat's going down there, breezy cold night. Do they fancy enough to get into a final?
That's the thing we've been talking about with Pat's all year, because it wasn't long ago they beat Cork City 4-0 at home. They hammered them, but Cork did keep them to a scoreless draw the last time at Turner's Cross, I think, as well.
And they drew with Rovers one all there.
Sometimes these mad ability to get results out of nowhere, and they'll get hammered the next game.
I think it's a bigger game for Cork than it is for St. Pat's. I think
it's a huge game for Pat's. It's a massive opportunity.
Yeah, but I think everything that's going off the pitch at Cork, I think Jerry Nash and the Cork players and the Cork hierarchy be thinking, if we can get to an FAI Cup final, this could galvanise the club. It could get everybody on the same hymn sheet. And look, I think there's certain things. I was watching the draw being done, and when Cork and Pat's got drawn in Inchicore, you could hear the cheers from the Inchicore crowd going, and I thought
it's the first thing on the wall.
First problem, isn't it?
Don't like that at all. And look, Cork are more than capable of getting a result over Pat. So people are thinking that Pat's will go down there torn up. If the game goes ahead tonight, it's exactly what Pat's don't want. Windy, horrible, bumpy pitch. They'll still try and play football, by the way.
Yeah.
So the Cork press becomes a huge weapon all of a sudden. And I can't see Stephen Kenny saying, do you know what, lads, let's just lump a forward for the first 25 minutes and we'll go from there. So I think it's a real banana peel of a game for St. Pat's.
Is it like that you wouldn't have a wholehearted trust in Pat's in conditions like that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't have wholehearted trust in Pat's in general, to be honest with you. I think I look at them, and when they click, they look really, really good. They can hurt anybody going forward, but it's the same old problems out of possession. When they go forward, there's nobody thinking, well, what happens if we lose the ball now? It's only Jamie Lennon who thinks, I'll stand here, and if it breaks down, they're all over the place. And people have said to me, oh, Keith, you're being a little bit harsh with Pats, because, you know, they're still in the European race. A lot of people were tipping them to win the league this season, and now they're saying, oh, they're in the European race. Okay, that's great, but I thought they'd be close to winning the league this season. So the horse has already bolted. They come out of Europe and they've hit a bit of form.
Yeah.
They lost last week, and I don't know. It's probably gradual improvement.
That's the thing for Pat. You need to go, you know,
your only way.
Losing last week, you know, played into the likes of Derry and Bowles' hands as well. Like, and if we keep saying that you have to finish fourth in this league if you expect Rovers to win the cup, like, and get the extra place, like, so. And they're a bit off that now at the moment.
Are they in a conundrum that they have about three or four of the most talented players in the league, but that's their only way of playing, is to utilise the talent? and they maybe don't have the, I thought it's like not having the mental toughness.
You can have 11 talented players in the league, but you need to have the work rate as well to go with it.
Yes, that's the question of them,
is
it?
They don't have, that's where you see that they're lacking. And as Keith says, in possession, they all look great. They all want the ball, they're on the ball. But it's once the turnover happens, where's your players working hard to get back? You see their wingers staying forward, not tracking back. We've seen it in the European game where it was popped out all the time, you know, 1-2s around, people not tracking runners, and so many chances created from it, you know, and Pats have done that. They get away with it in our league quite a bit, but you don't get away at a higher level, you know, and they've been picked off a lot of the times this year by better players.
We should say as well, there's a lot of Pats players that, like, you think, you look at them, I look at Keane Levy playing for Pats and I think, what a player, wiggles away from tackles and looks so good when he dribbles with the ball. I think he's one goal this season. Yeah. I mean, you look at him and think, what a player. And then you look at Mulrain, you think, brilliant player. I think he's one goal as well. El Busebi done his shoulder early doors. But the wingers, in terms of goals and assists, haven't really come to the party. The attacking midfielders haven't really come to the party. And it's thrown a whole lot of pressure on young Meish Amelia's shoulders. And he's done quite well this season. But I think Forrester has 5 or 6 goals this season, sort of half-heartedly come to the party. But yeah, some of the stats are quite worrying in terms of goals and assists from the more creative players.
Well, if it goes ahead, 7:30 kickoff, Turners Cross, Cork City against Pats in the FAI Cup semi-final. The other one is Shamrock Rovers against Kerry, of course, and the other one. And tonight there's 2 games in the Premier Division as well, Waterford against Drogheda United and Derry City against Sligo Rovers. And conscious enough of time, lads, we actually might skip forward to the Republic of Ireland squad that Hamer Hargrimsson has named for the upcoming games, away to Portugal and at home to Armenia. I will get to the headline in a second, back of the Irish Independent this morning, and carried in a few other publications. I won't stay where I am not wanted, Hargrimsson says. The Ireland manager says postponing new contract talks was his decision. Jesus, was it?
Right position.
The FBI coming to him to say we want to continue this party. Seems unlikely.
Yeah, like, you're only a couple of games in as well, like, you're already writing somebody off as a manager. Mm. There has to be a redemption story still going as well. Like, you have to be able to start off badly and finish strong, and you have that kind of Hollywood story as well. And like, you can't be letting go of a manager halfway through a campaign either. Like, who'd you bring in there? Like,
we're only talking about the side. Yeah,
like, who'd you bring in for
after
that?
2 games, people are like, he's a dead man walking, he should leave. And you're like, man, we're only 2 games in.
I know.
And I know you're saying, oh, the tournament is possibly over.
Yeah.
But he still have a chance to get in there.
Well, he definitely believes that there's a chance. He's saying he believes anyway. Yeah, and 3 points minimum needed out of these 2 games.
Yeah, exactly. And is it possible? Yeah. Does it look possible from the way we've been playing? Possibly no. But I think you need to give him a bit of time as well, because no matter who you get in, who would want the job? That's the first thing. And then whoever comes in, they're still working with the same players. You know, basically the same squad of players that we have. And he's going to get much more out of them. I don't know. Like, you know, I think just, you know, try to get behind him for the change and try spur the team on and see what happens in the next couple of games before you make judgment on him.
I think it's strange, because the wave of optimism, like, I'm very pessimistic about this Irish team at the best of times. I think we've a real lack of talent, especially in the middle of the park. But when I was on the way to the Hungary game, walking through Bath Avenue, it was the wave of optimism, the fans spilling out, and that all came from Hamer in the press. And I'm looking back now and thinking, like, Stephen Kenny done the same. He came in and said, we're not going to play this British style of play. We're going to do our own thing. And he tried to reinvent the wheel, really, with football. And now we have a manager that's given us this confidence that is unfounded confidence for me. And did he go the right way about it? Should he have been a little bit more realistic? He's like, look, Armenia aren't a bad team, to be fair, lads. And Hungary should really do us. But the confidence, I thought, where's this coming from?
I think if he comes out with that, like, people are saying, oh, he's very negative, or Irish, you know, if he says, oh, look at Hungary are good, and, well, like, what's he saying? Ireland is, we'll contradict him and say Ireland's a good team. We need to, you know, be saying how good they are rather than, oh, we might struggle. But you're probably right, you should have been realistic and saying, well, look, Portugal, we mightn't get points against Portugal, Armenia, they're a good side, blah blah blah, they're probably on our level. Hopefully we get something from it. But I think if he does come out with things like that, negative talk like that, the FAI wouldn't be happy, because he'd be like, you need the big look.
Is that what's hurt him in a roundabout way, being so positive and then getting pretty much battered in the 2 games? I mean, in the 2 games, we torn up for 45 minutes. In 180 minutes of World Cup qualifying football, we torn up for 45 minutes against Hungary in the second half.
You can't legislate for the players the way they played, though. You know, you can only do so much on the sideline. When you go over that white line, Nathan Collins looks like a diluted version of himself, like Josh Cullen. Like, you've got to put some onus on the players as well. And you look at the appointment of Hamer in the first place, and you think his record was 33% win rate across, like, and they're not big jobs either. Mm-hmm. Either, like, expect the win rate to be a little better, how he got the job in the first place. But when you do get players across the line, you're trusting these lads to go out and perform their duties, and they just haven't done that. So like the players have got to take a lot of flack as well.
Well, like Coleman coming back in, I've absolutely no problem with it. I'd had him in the last squad just for his leadership abilities and the fact that he's had relative success with Ireland. The fact that he's thrown Coleman back in, he's bringing Egan back in, you're thinking, well, which is it? Like, are you going for leadership, older heads? Are you not going for that? It seems quite reactive from Hamer rather than this is the way I'm moving forward and that's it, right? Like, oh no, well, I'll do this now and I'm going to bring Egan back. I just think it's a little bit all over the place. You're not quite
he's
sure who he wants.
For experience now, just to try shore up and try get grind out results. I do find it strange. Coleman come back in, he's saying it's for playing purposes and things that have for football reasons. Like, I think if you want him around the squad, put him on the staff. You know, bring him in, put him on the staff, and let him go around to the players and G them up and do everything else. You know, but if you're putting him there for football reasons, he hasn't played in a long time. I don't think that's contradictory to me. Like, you know, he's only played two League Cup games.
Well, it does, like, not much has changed since the last squad when he left.
He said before, he said, why would I bring him? He's not going
exactly,
to play.
Exactly, so he's contradicting.
He played the League Cup away at the Wolves when he was out of position at left back. Yeah. That was the game he started.
But even we were talking about the last Ireland match, like, he was already playing left back. Surely, he's not a left back. Surely we have a left full in the country somewhere that could play that position and do a job. Like, why do you need to change right full over to left full and change your squad around? Like, you know, I'm sure.
Any Irish player who's generally in the starting 11, has any of them come out with their reputation enhanced when they play for Ireland?
Kelleher's the only one.
Probably Queenie,
And there's an expectation with him as well, so he doesn't even get that much praise.
No, that's it. And there'll come a time where it does drop and like he'll be under the scrutiny. He's like, well, you look at Coleman coming back in, like, are they looking at putting John Egan in the back three, and then
who knows?
Why are you bringing Coleman back? Like, sure, he can't play wing back.
Well, there's a decision, a big call to be made, because there's no Jason Knight. So he's out injured. So Josh Cullen, presumably he's going to stick with Cullen, needs a new midfield partner. So who's that going to be? So Jason Malumbi's back in. Will Smallbone's in. So Malumbi's still at West Brom. Smallbone with hair now as well.
Looks well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Looks really good.
He's on loan at Millwall. So they have a big call to make there. I don't know, will John Egan play? So this is his first time back in the squad in 2 years. September 2023 was his last cap. He scored against Portugal, of course, 4 years ago when Ireland went 1-0 up. Do you remember that? And Ronaldo got the two late goals.
We're only talking about
in Faro.
Probably one of the best defensive displays I've seen.
Right? So are we still capable of that 4 years later to do something like that?
Yeah, I think when we play the top teams, we're more tuned in defensively.
We are, aren't we? It suits us.
We know they're going to have the ball. You're looking at saying Ronaldo, we know one of the best players ever to play in the world. Like, so concentration levels will be high. When we play the other teams, the smaller teams, our concentration levels will go because we have more possession of the ball, or we should have more possession of the ball, and we open up. And it's like a bit like Pat's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
We don't tune in quick enough for the transfer of the ball. Like, so that's sort of similar to that. Whereas against Portugal 4 years ago, as I said, defensively we were great. People saying, oh, we played brilliant. We didn't. We defended brilliantly. And just unfortunate to concede two goals later on from Ronaldo again.
Do we struggle with expectation against the teams that we should be beating? The expectation to play ball?
Yeah, probably. There is an expectation to play ball. It's a bit of both at the moment. At least Stephen, you knew it was all ball.
Yeah.
Like, Travtoni is probably long a little bit. Like, but you need a Russia-esque type performance away, that Richard Dunn type performance where we've got to go and get a massive result over there. And you just look at maybe the mentality of the players at the moment. Troy Parr coming in, it was a weird kind of comment yesterday about he might be available for one, won't be available
so
for
he's
the other.
In he's not fit at the moment, but they hope he's going to be available for the Armenia game. I suppose you need some sort of a goal threat in that match, because at the moment it feels like you nearly have much of a chance away to Portugal as you do at home to Armenia with the way that they're playing.
You need him to step up and go, well, I want to play in that game. Like, I'm carrying a bit of an injury, but I want to play. Sammy Smodics as well pulled out the last one and then it was available for his team at the weekend. You're going, this is an international game, you need to be available for this. Like, this is your country you're playing for. Same with Callum O'Dowd is out now as well, got injured last night. So it's going to be an interesting way to go.
Who would you put midfield with Cullen? So the midfielders in the squad, I mentioned Smallbone and Malumbi, and there's also Jack Taylor and Finn Azzaz. So that's all that's listed here in front
probably
of me.
Malumbi for me might be the one that will go in there.
It's a nice in that squad at all.
Like, yeah,
he's at half time and hasn't played a minute since.
You're totally against the idea of Nathan Collins in midfield and that kind of an experiment, is it? Remember they tried it against England at Wembley, didn't work out, and then like that's what I was thinking. My head went there with John Egan, that they'll play John Egan centre back and they'll move someone else to holding midfielder. Maybe they'll play three centre mids now, because
that's where my mind is going, a 5-3-2, very similar to what the Scottish do. Just like you bog down the middle of the park. I'd have Smallbone, Cullen, and Malumbi, just tell them to run, and I'd have Parrott and Ferguson up front. Put Ogbeni as a right wing back, Manning as a left wing back, and just tell them you are the ones providing the width and just try and stop the other team scoring. I keep saying it, but people keep telling me we've got good defenders, yet we don't keep clean sheets. How about we start keeping clean sheets and then we'll take whatever we can get at the top end of the pitch.
So, you know,
it's crazy. Collins this and O'Brien that and Kelleher, and you go, we never keep clean sheets. So how are they good defenders? Where's this opinion come from? Because of what they do with their clubs. They're totally different with an international jersey on them.
Yeah, you've been strong on this, in fairness, for a good while at this stage. Do you know what's happened, lads? We've run out of time. Do you believe it? We've other shouts here, though, at Stadia. Japan National Stadium is amazing. It's like something from the future inside. It says Carlino, Crow Park is class. It says Dixon, La Bombonera, Boca Juniors, Michael, best stadium of atmosphere ever was. It was Italian 90 in the quarterfinal defeat to Rome, or to Italy in Rome. It was an 18-year-old who went through all the emotions that night from Dermot. So loads of shouts coming in. Lads, thanks, as usual. Barry and Owen.
Thank you. I was just going to say, Alan Quinlan was outside and I was talking to him. He said Johnny Sexton's talk didn't do well.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, Rovers. Johnny with Shamrock Rovers. Yeah. We'll have to interrogate Quinny about that.
He's to get past the quarterfinal, though.
That's it. That is very true. I'll tell you what else is true. OTP Breakfast, UPMC, Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or Ben and they used to choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.